Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. It's July 15th. Goodness, I can't believe July is half over already.
I know.
Got Sam and Kevin in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Man, it's been hot out, though. It's been a hot summer, hasn't it?
We get a reprieve today, though. I think it's only going to be in the low 80s.
Good morning, Brad. Yes, I think it's going to be pleasant for the next couple of days, and I'm glad.
Absolutely. So we're in this weird in-between time. If you're not a baseball fan, there's just no sports to watch.
No, I'm waiting for football season. I mean, the World Cup just ended. We had that. That was a nice little thing to have this summer. But I'm not a big baseball fan, not really a big basketball fan, but I'm getting excited for the NFL to start back up and college football.
Now, I'm not going to start because we'll talk about soccer, and I don't want to go there.
You have, well, and you have nothing to talk about when it comes to college football.
You're pitiful.
All right, moving on. We have a great show this morning. We have Gary Kitchen with us. Gary is the president of the, I'm going to say this wrong, I didn't get it from you in the beginning, Leona?
Leona, correct.
Leona M. Kitchen Foundation. And it they are focused on Alzheimer's relief and giving caregivers a break. So with that, let me just toss it over to you, Gary, and we typically start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you grew up and went to school and how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay. Well, I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and my dad worked for General Electric, so we ended up moving and ended up living in Louisville, Kentucky. That's where I grew up. Graduated from University of Louisville, and at that time I had a Navy scholarship, so I went right into service, and I was a communications officer and an operations officer on a destroyer and an executive officer on a minesweeper. And I left there and actually started in the grocery business and moved to Atlanta with Kroger and have been here ever since. So I love the South. I'm kind of one of those Yankees who came down and stayed here and never went back.
The damn Yankees.
That's right.
And how long have you been here?
I've been here since 72.
Well, so you're practically a native.
Exactly.
All your children are probably native.
Well, my son was born here, so I feel he's kind of a native. And my daughter was born in Panama City, Florida. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so south of the Mason-Dixon
That's
line
right.
anyway.
That's right.
So.
That's right.
Excellent. So you had a career with Kroger then, I take it, and retired?
About 10 years with Kroger, and then I've just stayed involved in the grocery industry the rest of the time.
Gotcha.
I've done about everything in the grocery industry you can do.
So my understanding is that a year or so ago you retired from your, as you called it before, the paying job?
Correct. In July I retired from my paying job, and now I'm doing my non-paying job, which is the foundation, which was named after my mother.
So tell us about that.
Okay, my mom came down from Pennsylvania and lived with me for about 3 years. She had Alzheimer's, and after the 3 years, I couldn't take care of her anymore because it's just so mind-boggling when you're new at Alzheimer's dementia. So I had to move her into an assisted living place, and so she lived there for about 2 years, and she has passed away about 3 years ago now. And so at that time, at the assisted living, we participated in the Alzheimer's Association walk. We raised some funds through the assisted living facility. I was kind of like, you know, we didn't raise a whole lot of money. So I got with the executive director. We decided to put on a golf tournament. And for 3 years, we put on a golf tournament, raised a little over $17,000, all of which we gave to the Alzheimer's Association. My mother passed away, and when she did, then we had a decision to make, whether we wanted to continue doing the golf tournament, what direction we were going into. So we decided to start a 501c3 nonprofit, named it after my mom, the Leona M. Kitchen Foundation. And so we ended up becoming a nonprofit, and our main focus is, main mission, if you will, is helping families with short-term respite care. So if a individual is taking care of their mom, dad, husband, wife, we provide funds so that they can take a break, whether it's 4 hours to go to the gym and go to grocery shop, whether it's for a weekend, whatever. We just try to give caregivers a relief and a break.
So let me step back for just a second, and I'm just personally curious, what was it that made you think that you could start up a 501c3 and be successful at it? Because that's not what most people do. You know, it's more of a entrepreneurial sort of bent, and I'm just curious, what was it that really sparked you to say, you know, I can do this better, and I can do it better on my own?
Well, I think with the assistance of the people that I started the 501c3, I've had a very strong group of friends and associates who helped me with the golf tournament, and we sat down and said, okay, what are we going to do now? And we were able to come up with, you know, one of the big problems that Alzheimer's dementia poses is with caregivers. I think the figure is like 30% of caregivers pass away before the actual individual that has Alzheimer's dementia because of the stress of trying to take care of somebody that has Alzheimer's.
Yeah, interesting you say that, because we had that exact situation just in the last 3 weeks with one of our clients.
Is that right?
Exactly the same thing. So that definitely rings true for us anyway.
Right. Well, and we didn't know of any foundation or group. I know Alzheimer's does help families, but we felt like, you know, it was a great need, because I know that the Alzheimer's Association, from what I heard at one time, had a waiting list of like 70 to 100 people for respite care. So we decided that this was an area that needed help. And with my friends and associates, like I said, we decided, well, maybe there's something that we can do to help people. So that's when we took the golf tournament, took the funds, started the 501c3 to be able to go ahead and help families with respite care.
Interesting.
Tell us about, you've mentioned several times that you exist to provide respite care. Talk to our listening audience about what that is and how they would go about contacting you if they would be interested. We'll just start from the beginning. I kind of got ahead of myself, but what it is and what services or length of services that you can assist with, and then how they would obtain it.
Okay. Basically, respite care is having a caregiver come in so that a caregiver company, like your company, come in and relieve that caregiver of the burden of taking care of their family member with Alzheimer's dementia. It is such a stressful job, as I indicated and you mentioned you had a case just recently. It's so stressful that people need a break. So we provide, whether they want a we had a family who wanted to go to Texas for the weekend, and they found assisted living to put their parent in. We help pay for that. We also have families that need 4 hours here to go to the store or just to go to a movie, just to get away, to be able to recharge themselves, and we do that. So we provide the money to be able to have a home care person come in to be able to do that.
Who are the people that you are relieving, the caregivers? You mentioned they're caregivers, but how do they relate usually to the individual with Alzheimer's?
Most of the ones that we assist are either husband or wife, whose husband or wife has the disease, or a child whose parent has problems, one of the two. And I think they're probably about 50-50. And the real stressful portion of it, I think, is the spouse, because that is so tough, because when you've lived with somebody for 30, 40 years, and you see them develop this disease and they don't even know who you are, it's extremely difficult, and the stress is just unbelievable.
Well, and it's all on the caretaker.
Correct.
You know, I mean, if you flip, if you use a different scenario and you talk about a disease like ALS or Parkinson's, where, you know, you can be alert and engaged for a long time. You
right.
know, and dementia will ultimately play into it, but, you know, that person is aware inside their body, and they
correct.
Know what's happening. They still recognize their loved one, and they can
right.
provide at least some empathy. And in the case you're talking about, they're bearing that burden alone.
Exactly.
And a lot of times the kids are in remote cities, you know, around the country or even around the state. You know.
In my case, I have a brother in Louisville, Kentucky. Well, there's no way that he could come down and assist.
Right.
I mean, because first of all, he didn't deal with the disease. He's not really familiar with it as I was. And so it is extremely difficult. Like you say, the families are fragmented. They're all over the place. And it generally, one person, whether it's a brother or a sister or a mother or whatever, there's generally one person who has that great
bears
burden.
The load.
Exactly.
Gary, most people, I would say that most people in our listening audience don't understand the disease. They're not involved. They don't see it. Obviously,
right.
you've mentioned several times that you couldn't deal, you couldn't take
right.
care of your mother
right.
any longer. Talk to us about that. Talk to us about the nature of when you get to a point you say, it's beyond my abilities. Just give our listening audience a flavor of that from the personal standpoint.
First of all, the disease is characterized by basically having your loved one in front of you and they disappear. They forget everything. They may have a memory of when they were 2 years old or 3 years old, but they can't tell you what they did 5 minutes ago, and you get the same question over and over and over. And there's no arguing with an Alzheimer's patient. All you have to do is change the subject, redirection. So then you talk about physical needs. They don't want to take a shower. And maybe they wear the same clothes day after day after day. So the physical demands are there. They can't fix a meal. My mother used to be a great cook. I came in the house one afternoon and the gas stove was on. Couldn't figure out, you know, found her and, you know, she had turned it on to cook something and forgot about it and left it. So it was a situation where you end up with a safety problem. And I went from full-time to part-time to take care of my mother. Still, it just got to the point where I couldn't do it. I couldn't be there all the time.
And I think that's the key. As the disease begins to manifest itself, it's not too bad. You know, there's forgetfulness and minor issues, if you want to describe them that way. But as it progresses, for the caregiver, it then becomes full-time. And there's not a moment in the day that you can get away from it.
Exactly.
And that leads us right back to where you are in your foundation. And so with that, what is it that the foundation does? I know you said provide care, but get
right.
into specifics now. And how do you go about doing that?
Well, a family who needs assistance would just go to our website. It's www.lmkfoundation.org. And there is a respite application on there, and we request that they fill out that application. That application comes automatically to me. Twice a month, I present all the candidates to our board of directors. They approve it, and at that time, I contact the caregiver and whatever company that they have selected to assist them with the care. There's also my phone number that's on there, and that's my cell phone number. So all they have to do is either go to the website or call me, and we start the process.
Obviously, you mentioned before we began that you get 2 to 3 calls per week, if I'm not mistaken, is what you said, of people at least inquiring about assistance.
Right.
So let's just do some quick math. You're talking about 150 opportunities to provide some respite care. I would think that gets to be quite expensive.
It does. And that kind of leads to the other situation. We are a nonprofit. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We're an all-volunteer operation. I take no funds, nor does anybody else who I work with. And so, therefore, we have a couple opportunities to raise money. On our website, there is a donate button up in the corner that you can hit and donate directly to the funds via PayPal. We also have a golf tournament in April where we raise money, and we're also putting on a casino night October 24th at the Marietta Country Club. And those items are done to raise money to be able to help families. I've been contacted in a little over a year. I've been contacted by approximately 80 families. We have assisted or are assisting at this time 30 families. So as you say, it does get expensive, and that's where the fundraising comes into play and where we're trying to raise money to be able to help more families because it's a dramatic need.
Well, and we certainly want to encourage our listening audience, if they are able to assist, to reach out to the foundation and help out. We're going to take a step back. Why is it that the foundation is working directly with the end user, the person in need, versus going through an intermediary like the Alzheimer's Association? What spurred you to move into that direction?
Well, we felt like the Alzheimer's Association does great work. They've got their niche, and that's great. But what we wanted to do was we wanted to assist families directly. Mm-hmm. And we felt that the less bureaucracy that you have in between the family and the foundation, the better we're going to be, the more money that we can actually put into helping families. One other thing I did want to mention, fundraising, we did have a Girl Scout who is a senior at Altoona High School. She wrote a book about her grandfather who had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. The foundation published the book for her. For that, she got her Gold Award. She was named a 2013 Young Woman of Distinction by the Greater Girl Scout Council of Atlanta. She got a $3,000 scholarship to go to Shorter. And Sydney Oden is her name, and she's done a great job. And we also have those books for sale to be able to raise some money. So in addition to the respite care, we also want to try to educate people and families about what's going on. And this book is aimed at children. So that's another opportunity we have to raise money. And it's on the website as well where you can order it.
That's got to be tough, educating children on this.
It is. My grandson, and not so much my granddaughter because she was older, but my grandson who's 8 now, he always wanted to know where Gigi was. And we'd take him to see her, and he was very intimidated by what was going on and didn't understand what was going on. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do with this book is to be able to help children understand what's going on and how to deal with it.
Yeah, I'd venture to say that there's more people out there who don't understand what's going on than just children. Because it's a very, very difficult. And Brad and I deal with it virtually daily. How many radio shows? I mean, dozens and dozens of shows about it as far as research and treatment. And Brad and I look at each other sometimes, and we just kind of shake our head and what are we going to do?
You know, the one client that we had that sticks out in my mind, he was taken to a nursing home because the spouse couldn't handle him anymore, right. And he was beyond the ability to be in a memory care unit. And she was 51, and he was maybe 8 or 9 years older, so it was early onset. But he was gone. He was completely gone. And she had kids that were still – she had one still in high school and 2 in college. And, you know, you wonder how the kids dealt with it, but just looking at her, she was a deer in the headlights. She had no idea what to do, and you could see it was just – taking its toll.
A couple of things. A lot of people don't understand Medicare doesn't cover any costs with Alzheimer's. They don't help with assisted living. They don't help with the home health care. And tagging on to your comment, we're helping a family through, we also are associated with Alzheimer's Music Fest, and we've helping a family with some long-term care. We've got a lady whose husband is 46 years old. has early onset Alzheimer's. His mother died 3 years ago of Alzheimer's. Her mother is driving up Mondays from Macon, staying until Friday afternoon and going back and taking care of her husband. And she has three kids, 18, 12, and 6. And she's trying to work full-time and also take care of her husband, who now can't be left alone.
Right. And so, the kids are so young that it...
Exactly.
And a good point. Many of the general public believes, okay, this is a 60, 70-year-old...
That's disorder. Right.
And it's not true. It begins... I mean, Brad and I have had numerous clients who, just as you said, in their 40s and 50s. So it's not an elder disease,
exactly.
So to speak. And you know... Everyone wants to know why. Everyone wants to understand, and so do I. But there's no clear-cut answer as to why.
Correct.
It's the matter of a fact is that it exists, it affects people, and if it's long-term, it is a tremendous burden.
Exactly. Well, we're talking to the lady now to try to find out exactly how we can go forward after the funds that are set aside for her are gone.
Yeah.
Because she took a break in the summer and sent her kids, I guess, to live with her mother in Macon so she could take care of her husband, et cetera. But now, you know, that school's coming back in, you know, and after the funds run out, we have...
Then just, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Gary, let me clarify something. I just want to make certain that there's no confusion in the listening audience. You said that Medicare does not cover this expenditure, and what you were referring to is Medicare doesn't cover the care, the personal care that in the home or the assisted
Correct.
Living. Now, it is covered, the medical expenses associated with
right.
Alzheimer's, but that is a fraction.
That's right.
Of
but,
the cost.
But would it be covered if the patient isn't yet 62?
Well, if they're not, no. Because if they're not eligible for Medicare, the only
exactly.
in-stage renal dialysis is I think, the only thing that's covered before you qualify for Medicare. So good point.
I think there are some Medicaid programs for
right.
certain diseases, and I don't know if Alzheimer's is one or not, but, you know, that Medicaid kicks in after all your other assets are exhausted.
Exactly. You have the look-back period, and you have everything yeah. else. And we also help with the VA aid and attendance pension that a lot of people aren't aware of. You know, if you're husband or wife or whatever had served in the military during wartime, they are eligible for an aid and attendance pension.
Now, how do you help with that?
Well, basically, our lawyer, who is, again, a volunteer, is on our board of directors. He's qualified to deal with the VA, and there are forms to fill out, and eligibility has to be ascertained via the DD-214, which every veteran gets when they leave the service, and marriage certificates if it's a wife, et cetera. And so we basically help them get all the paperwork done and file it with the VA.
So, that's incredible. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it takes a long period of time. It took 14 months for my mother to get the pension. However, they do backdate the pension to the time that you actually filed the first paperwork.
Yeah, the problem is if the client dies
that's
in
correct.
The middle of the process, you get nothing.
That's right. That's
so.
Right.
And 14 months, I had not heard anybody that took that long.
That's,
until
that's
you just
a long
said
time.
That.
And I actually went through a lawyer who does this on a regular basis.
Wow.
And it took 14 months.
Wow.
Well, we won't, the VA and the benefits, and that's a different story.
That's true.
We'll let that dog lay
no,
right
but,
now.
No, but that's, I mean, it's really an incredible service that you provide, because it is complex to fill out that application, and if you get it wrong, you got to go back to the beginning.
That's correct.
And I know there are a lot of families out there that would love to have some assistance, and you know, we know attorneys like you,
correct,
that will help with the process, but as you know, they can't charge for it.
That's right.
And so if there's no way for them to make money, they're going to maybe give the family a few pointers, but they're going to turn them loose.
Correct.
You know, unless there's some assets to move around or some paperwork
right.
to be updated. It can be challenging finding, particularly for families that are struggling financially.
That's correct. And, of course, we don't charge anything because, you know, it's illegal to charge anything to assist that. But we do it for free as well.
Gary, for someone who has lived it with your mother and who's involved in these foundations, What do you see down the road? What do you see as it relates to Alzheimer's, just mentioned memory disorder, 5 years from now? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel, or is that tunnel still dark? Just tell us your personal thoughts there.
Well, my personal thoughts are that when my mother came down with the disease, they said, well, within 5 to 10 years, we'll have a cure, or mm-hmm. we'll have something to be able to take care of it. And there was nothing. There is nothing. I mean, they have drugs that will assist in, you know, slowing the progression of the disease. There's a trial now with, I think, TAR-RX. There's a bunch of trials going on. I don't see anything at this point that is going to cure it, or, you know, they may find a test that shows maybe a genetic link, or maybe a, you know, some people have called it diabetes of the brain. So there may be, you know, some research that they're doing that will assist, but I don't see any cure, and I think it's getting worse. I think we're seeing a lot of early onset, like we've talked about, and I think it's getting worse.
Well, and the train's left the station. I mean, you know, the baby boomers are getting to the age where...
That's why you're seeing so much of it. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's that, but that was the main point.
Yeah, I mean, that was the question I had in my mind, and Brad and I will acknowledge we see it more and more and more, and so we ask ourselves why, and you want to say, well, is it because diagnostic techniques are better and they just, it was always out there and we didn't know. I think it's because so many baby boomers are now moving into the prime age for this disorder. So, I don't want to be a doom and gloom guy, but I don't see a lot of relief out there.
And it's been around. I mean, I remember my grandfather, when he passed away, they said he just, you know, I asked why he died or how he died, and I was, I don't know, in my late teens, I think, and they said, oh, well, he died of senility.
Senility. Yeah, and correct. That's what it was. But it wasn't, again, the numbers weren't what they are today simply because of the baby boomer generation.
Well, correct, and I don't think they were really measuring it that way either.
Exactly.
That's right.
You know, well, she just died of old age.
Yeah, my grandfather was the same way. He turned off the television one time because he didn't want the Germans blowing up his house. And he died because he was senile, and they didn't realize that actually, you know, it was Alzheimer's.
Right.
Gary, what is the let's wrap this up on a happy note. What is the what's the reason you do this? What is it that gives you the most joy in doing this?
Well, the reason I do it is because my mother was kind of the matriarch of the family. My dad died when he was 58 years old. My mother lasted until she was 90. Mm. She really helped everyone in the family, the extended family. She was always there. If anybody needed anything or needed advice, whatever, they went to her. So that's why I did it. The joy I get out of it is on the website, we've got a thing called Thanks and Gratitude to the LMK, and there are a couple of unsolicited, actually, letters that were sent to me saying we really appreciate it. One of the families was able to go see their great-granddaughter for the first time because we were being able to provide the assistance so they could do that, and they were just overjoyed. So it's being able to help people, you know, be able to just kind of get recharged to come back and be able to, you know, live a better life and be able to take care of their relative better.
Well, I'm going to make a philosophical statement here. It's part of the American spirit is not looking for an entity, a government or someone to do something. When we see an issue, the individual is saying, what can I do to make this better? And you know, it's because of people like you and others that have made this nation, and you know, we do it much more effective. So I'm, like I said, I'm sorry about the political statement, but that's that's where I am. Gary, we really appreciate it. Before we wrap up, is there a story of someone you've reached out to that you'd like to convey to our listening audience?
Well, we've had the real interesting part about it is my daughter was at a restaurant about 6 months ago. She ran into a girlfriend of hers that she had known ever since she was in the first grade. They lived in our neighborhood. We've known them forever. Father had Alzheimer's, and he was being combative. He was talking about, you know, killing his wife, daughters. They were stealing everything from him. He was just really just aggressive. And this young lady was telling my daughter about it. My daughter said, look, we've got an ability to help you here. Mentioned the foundation. I met with her and her sister and my daughter for about 3 hours one Saturday at a Starbucks. And we were able to get them help. And the gentleman is just doing absolutely great right now.
Great.
One other thing. If you could, just tell us a little bit about your relationship or how you're involved with the Alzheimer's Music Fest, because I know that's coming up in about 2 weeks.
It's coming up on July 26th. It's going to be at the 120 Tavern Music Hall in Marietta. It's from 12 to 11. There are approximately 30 bands that are going to be playing at the Alzheimer's Music Fest, and these bands are doing this for free. 80% of the bands are associated with someone who has Alzheimer's, who has had Alzheimer's. So it's an endeavor of the heart. The gentleman who is putting it on is an independent musician, as most of these people are. His name is Vince Zangaro, and you can go to the Alzheimer's Music Fest website on Facebook and come join us. It's a nominal fee. I think we request a donation of like $10 to come in, listen to the music, have a meal at the tavern there, maybe have an adult beverage, and enjoy yourself. But it's going to be 30 bands. They've got two stages, and there's going to be a lot of music and a lot of fun. And one of the things about music, of all the things that affect Alzheimer's patients, music is not affected. So it's a great thing to be able to have your family. If, you know, a lot of religious people, you sing them the Jesus Loves Me, et cetera, they recognize it and go along with it. So that's why Vince started this, and we're a beneficiary of it, as well as Caring Together in Hope. So
what's the date and location of the music?
July 26th, and that's at the 120 Tavern and Music Hall in Marietta, Georgia.
Great. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because we've done work in the past with Second Wind Dreams. I'm sure you're familiar with them.
I know them well.
And one of their stories is about a guy who had been a musician, and you know, in the facility he didn't know anybody, couldn't recognize anybody, couldn't interact, and you know, the dream that his family had for him is that he would be able to get out and get on stage one more time, and they took him out somewhere to play, and he got up on stage and performed like he always
had.
You know, the minute he got back to the facility, it was back to what he was. But interesting that you say that about music, and it's an important part of it.
It is.
Gary, we certainly appreciate it. Tell our listening audience how they can reach you or the foundation.
Okay, the foundation website is lmkfoundation.org, or you can call my phone number is 404-428-1267.
We certainly appreciate it. And once again, we would like to extend an invitation to come back at a later time and tell us how things are going.
Great.
And we certainly appreciate the information and the update. So thank you again for being our guest.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's it for today. We want to remind those who are listening that they can always go to our website and listen to a rebroadcast of the show at www.ugeriaradio.com. And as we always do, we want to close and say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.